So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review.
Waiting has left me. Here we are, episode 102, and now I have 3 weeks all alone. I've never done a review away without Mr. Ting. I've called everybody in my contact list. Everyone's busy. Most people don't care for me, or they're just not interested. How will I possibly get through 3 weeks without Wei Ting? How am I going to get through Fall Brawl 1995? I guess I have to rely on four simple words.
It's time for action!
Hogan! You realize you are going into the most dangerous match of all times. War Games. Two steel cages. The Dungeon of Doom against the Hulkamaniacs.
I told you life would not be easy.
You're the one that created me. You and I can't coexist on this planet.
Ha ha! I can feel evil in Cage! You locked in with the second of Doom!
A shock, Kamala, the Zodiac, Ming.
All eight of us at the same time. The scarf on your head will start to smoke and boil.
Soon your hearing will go.
The master himself will drive the wagons with all the Hulkamaniac carcasses laying on it.
The Dungeon of Doom brought you these posies, but they expired. We love you not. We actually hate your guts. And we hate you!
You know what's gonna happen to the immortal Hulk Hogan?
You're gonna get buried.
My heart goes out to you!
I am not Jasmine, I am Aladdin. So far ahead, these bumps is lagging. See me in that new thing, bumps is gagging. I'm starting to feel like a dungeon dragon. Rah, rah, like a dungeon dragon. I'm starting to feel like a dungeon dragon. Look at my show footage, how these girls be spazzing. The fuck I look like getting back to a has-been.
Like a dungeon dragon, like a dungeon dragon, like a dungeon dragon, like a dungeon dragon, like a dungeon dragon.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. It's John Pollock and the higher power, the mystery reviewer, Arda Ocal.
Wait a minute. Was I the last person you called? Everybody in the contact list was unavailable. I'm A. I should be the first guy on your list.
I called the gaffer, and he was.
Ronnie Gaff said no. Oh man. Wow.
Page 425. And have a nice day.
I jobbed out to Ronnie Gaff. Amazing.
No, I won't lie, Arda. You were right at the top. I really. We had been talking about doing a review with you, and then
no,
it just turned out that that Wei is leaving for 3 weeks, and it worked out perfectly here. And I let you pick this week's review, and you just came back and said, how about Fall Brawl 95, Flair and Anderson? I was like, very random pick. I've never seen this event.
I'm sorry.
Sure. No, do not apologize. Because this show was fucked. There was stuff on this show that I have never seen, and we're going to call this the Gary Spivey edition of Review Away. My God. Now, Arda, have you watched this pay-per-view before? Was that...
No, that's why. I had never seen Flair and Anderson. I was like, that has to be a good match, right? I mean, they've never wrestled before, and now they are in pay-per-view. I thought, you know, I've never seen it before. It's a piece of history, I guess. So, yeah, you kind of have your suspicions about mid-90s WCW when you go into a pay-per-view.
Suspicions? This mid-90s WCW had to have been the creative famine of this company.
I want to ask you a question, though, before we start. SummerSlam, I was listening to the SummerSlam 89 podcast. Four sittings for you, it took,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So how many sittings did this take?
Twice. Two.
Two sittings?
Yeah, I had to take a break on. I watched this past Saturday, and then I came back to it on Tuesday to watch it. How about yourself?
Four! It took me four sittings. In fact, I just watched War Games before now. I was saving it. I was saving the War Games for today,
Lex Luger's epic performance in that match. So we're going to do this regular style here. We're going to go through the show. I've got some feedback there for you that we have at the end of this. And then next week, I also want to open up the questions. Art O'Cal here, a national television celebrity here.
Yeah, something like that.
We can take some questions for Art next week. So Art is going to be here for 3 weeks. Of review away, so this is going to be.
I'm pumped, man.
A lot of fun. We're going to call this. This will be pre-match.
Why don't we work together more? Seriously.
Moro's clearly divided us in this media divide.
Yeah. If you have any questions for Moro Ranallo, we will answer them on his behalf too. You can feel free to ask any question that you would want to ask Moro, and then you and I can answer it. I bet you we would know the answer.
I guess, is this an off week for Moro? Are you...
But he's not here.
You filling in, as usual?
No, it's repeats.
Oh, it's his vacation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's best of, so...
Well, let's get into Fall Brawl 95 from Asheville.
We can bail if we want. Right now. Last resort. This is it.
We've promised them. We've promised
We can
them.
Say no. This could be the end of the podcast right now.
I definitely want to get into this because this is, I think, going to be a very, very entertaining episode.
This has already been the most entertaining podcast ever. All right, let's go. Let's do
Fall
it
Fall Brawl 95. And Arda, you're going to be overwhelmed here by the notes I took. This was the opening fucking match. I had no idea.
Page.
Oh, dude, we're going to have to skim through this because we had an opener that went 5 hours between Flying Brian and Johnny B. Bad.
It was booked like WrestleMania 12. It honestly was. It was WrestleMania 12's main event in the opening match.
We start the show off with an opening video where it promotes Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, and tonight they will engage in, quote, hand-to-hand combat.
That's right.
And our announcers tonight, Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan, who alert us right away that the Giant has run over Hulk Hogan's Harley Davidson with a Hummer. And Heenan apologizes. Sorry. Heenan relays the message that the Giant has apologized for Hogan not being on the motorcycle when he ran it over.
Oh.
Vehicular manslaughter.
By the way, another big line in the opening montage, a continuous bombardment of excitement.
Bombardment? Whose line was that?
Continuous. It was in the opening video.
Did you happen to take shots for every time Tony Schiavone had to get in there that we are the biggest wrestling organization in the world?
Oh, my God.
This was a shit.
Hammer it home, why don't you? Hammer it home.
God.
In case I didn't know.
Just had Bischoff in his ear there.
Especially while watching the second match on the pay-per-view, which we'll get to.
Oh, fuck.
I was firmly thinking of that line, but anyway.
Our opener was Flying Brian, Ditch the Pillman, against Johnny B. Mero here. And we had Michael Buffer here, who did the announcing for all of the matches on this card. He would eventually get an even sweeter gig where he would announce one match.
Yes.
As a ring announcer yourself.
Well, I mean, first of all, Johnny B. Bad and Flying Brian did not care. Like, why is there an in-ring introduction in the opening match, first of all?
Not just that, it was like this whole, like, boxing introduction where they called this a United States Challenger Eliminator Bout. And then he ran down the tail of the tape, Brian Pillman weighing in at 218¾ pounds.
Exactly. Why?
Let's begin with a special WCW United States Heavyweight Championship Challenger Elimination Match. The winner of this match will be the mandatory opponent for the WCW U.S. Heavyweight Champion, the one and only Sting. This is a one-fall match with a 20-minute time limit. Your referee assigned is Nick Patrick. Introducing first, ladies and gentlemen, wearing black and white and weighing in at 226¾ pounds, he's no stranger to championship competition, as he was part of the former World Tag Team Champion Hollywood Blondes. Ladies and gentlemen, from Hollywood, California, he is Flying Brian!
Interesting that they are more in favor of Johnny B. Bad.
And his opponent, from Macon, Georgia, wearing red, white, and gold, weighing 238½ pounds, a former boxing gold glove champion, a former WCW World Television champion. He's a bad man, presenting Johnny B.
And meanwhile, Johnny B. Bad's throwing frisbees into the audience. Like, he doesn't even care. They're walking in front of him. Like, the crowd shot is the hard cam shot. Michael Buffer should be prominent. Instead, they're walking in front of him, throwing stuff.
I think this was right around when Buffer began, because Bad got into the ring, and he's just, like, cutting across the ring diagonally, and Buffer doesn't know where he should be positioned. And he's like, why is this guy throwing frisbees and shit out? I've worked with Holyfield,
exactly.
Poe, Tyson, and now this motherfucker is going to be throwing frisbees?
Exactly. What? Who is this guy?
Buffer did not look impressed here. No. And then, on top of the frisbees, Johnny B. Bad pulls out his confetti stick gimmick.
Yep, and throws it into the audience. Although Michael Buffer did say, when he was introducing Johnny B. Bad, he goes, he's a bad, bad man.
Michael Buffer having to do, like, wrestling introductions with the boxing delivery? Fantastic. And basically, the story here was that we had two baby faces, though the fans turned on Pillman right away. And then Schiavone notes that Pillman usually smiles and high fives, but he's not been very talkative today. Very Ooh. Serious encounter coming up for us. And Schiavone then notes how Sting wants to face Johnny B. Bad because he trained him, and he knows a lot about these youngsters. And that prompted me to go over to Wikipedia. Sting was a grand total of 1 year older than Johnny B. Bad.
Oh, okay.
And 3 years older than Pillman, these youngsters.
There you go. Yeah. And did he actually train Johnny B. Bad?
I don't believe so.
No.
I don't
Lies.
Know.
Lies. Schiavone, come on.
Who did train Johnny B. Bad?
I don't know.
I don't know
Sable?
If anyone's going to take credit for it. But
I don't know.
I think Johnny B. Bad at times gets a bad rap. I found it, especially in the mid-90s, when he was in the right in there with the right guy. I mean, this guy was not an embarrassing wrestler, but it's kind of his legacy is that, oh, this guy just got a great big contract and he sucked.
This was not a bad match.
I didn't think so at all.
As an opener, though. I think that's what you and I are debating here, is that it was a full match. It goes to overtime. It's half an hour?
This match went 29 minutes.
29 minutes for an opening match. And you know what? I actually got to give credit to Flying Brian, too, because he picked up on the crowd really fast. He actually changed the style mid-match. So good for him. That was actually a very good pickup by Flying Brian when the fans turned on him. He was like, okay, I'm going to work heel for the rest of the match.
We saw Pillman, a bit of an MMA influence here. He goes for the Boston Crab. Realizes it's not working, and before he blows out his arms holding this, he lets go. So yes. Often you'll see that in MMA. A guy's going for a guillotine or something, can't get it, but they'll keep it on until their arm's all blown up, and then they're fucked. Pillman, ahead of his time
in 1995.
We saw so much in this match. I had no clue this match was going to go as long as it did, but let's talk about some of the highlights here.
The one part that made me laugh was when Johnny, I think, who was it, Schiavone? He's like, Johnny B. Bad is obviously injured at this point, and he's reversing an Irish whip, as it said. Like, come on.
Schiavone and some of his tremendous timing. We saw Bad with a vertical suplex that sent Pillman to the floor, and this was right after the announcers state that, well, if he goes for this vertical suplex, he'll be disqualified. They went through with it, and Schiavone had to instantly cover, and he says that, well, Bad was on the outside of the apron, so therefore it wasn't a deliberate suplex over the top rope.
The old school rules in full effect.
The Bill Watson. Don't go off the top rope and don't go over the top rope.
Disqualifications. You'll lose some of your purse, John.
There was a sit-out powerbomb kick-out by Brian Pillman, then a tilt-a-whirl into a tombstone by Brian Pillman, but here in WCW, a tombstone is only a near fall.
Yeah, that's... he might have been up at 1.5, actually.
Schiavone went through all of Johnny B. Bad's moves he had here at the time, including the bad mood, the bad day, and the ever-so-scary Tutti Frutti.
Yes. I like how most of them have the word bad in them. Very well done.
very clever.
Good creativity.
Then we saw a big rest spot as Pillman had an abdominal stretch on with a minute left. They had a 20-minute time limit.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's exactly what I... And there was an arm bar, too, about 30 seconds left. If you're... Okay, logically... You know where I'm going with this. If you have 30 seconds left, and Michael Buffer is announcing it, so you know you have a minute left in the
abdominal
match.
Abdominal stretch.
Why on earth would you put on an abdominal stretch to try and make your opponent submit with a minute left?
Well, we went to the time limit, shockingly.
Wow.
So they announced that we're going into sudden death overtime with no time limit, which made me beg the question, why was there a time limit to begin with?
Excellent. Excellent point. Yes.
During the sudden death overtime, they went to fight on the floor. And what happened? Nick Patrick starts to count.
Of course.
What was going to happen if he reached 10? Yeah. I hate stuff like
double,
that.
Double count out. Yeah, what would have happened?
If I'm asking questions, come on. So we see a drop kick off the top by Pillman. It's met by a drop kick attempt by Johnny B. Badd as both were then selling on the mat. Sleeper spot by Pillman, who gets onto the back. Even put his hooks in here. Brian Pillman here.
It's clearly,
being influenced here.
This is pre-gun.
At one point, Johnny B. Badd goes to the floor, and Brian Pillman hit this crazy suicide dive where they had the hard camera, so it was zoomed out, and you saw him. The distance he got on this was incredible. And this was at a time when they had those steps there. Yeah. And you had to clear the steps to hit. Very impressive.
And this was in overtime after 20 minutes of wrestling.
Yes. Pillman then comes off the top, gets knocked off the top and crotches himself. Bad gets on top, but his feet were under the ropes, so the pinfall does not count. And then it leads to both going for a mid-ring, like high cross. Bad lands on top, and he gets the win 29 minutes and 18 seconds, and Shivani guesses that they went about 45. So Johnny B. Bad gets the win. Kind of a odd finish to this after
yes.
they did all these spots and whatnot, but a hot match. But I agree with you. This was an odd choice to start the show off.
Not only that, but Tony Schiavone completely blew his wad in this match. So it's like he was the most excited in this match. So for the rest of the pay-per-view, you're wondering, man, how much more excited can he get? War Games is still happening, man.
Well, I think you could have had the most energetic announcer possible, and I don't know how you would have got excited for the follow-up to this. They did pick the best match to follow, a 30-minute match, and we'll get to that in just a second. But Heenan and Schiavone discuss the Ric Flair-Arn Anderson match coming up tonight. Heenan blames Hogan for all of this occurring. And then we go backstage with Gene Okerlund in the first of about 5,000 interviews that Mean Gene conducted on this show. And he's with Ric Flair. And he says that this is where himself and Arn began their careers here in Asheville, North Carolina. Flair says they wrestled together, they sweat together, they cried together. And based on some stories, I bet they did a lot more together.
Mm.
And says he was adopted, Arn came from a broken home, they bonded, and tonight Arn is going to face greatness. And Gene then asks, do you hate Arn? And Flair says, no, I love them. I love him, but there can only be one King of the Hill. And, like, I wasn't watching WCW at this particular time period. I watched this promo and assumed Ric Flair was the babyface. This is a very babyface promo, didn't you think?
I think,
or no?
Yeah, it was a babyface promo, but I also think it was, like, that's why I think I wanted to watch this pay-per-view in the first place, because this promo was tremendous. I think they both had tremendous promos.
I thought Arn's was out of this world.
Yeah, Arn's is probably one any wrestler should watch if they want to learn how to deliver a good promo. But even Flair, I mean, it was a good promo. It got me interested in the match.
Yes.
Whether the match lived up to the hype, that's another story. But it did definitely get you interested in the match. And I thought this was one of the better parts of the pay-per-view was those promos.
So then I had to check my cell phone because I thought I was getting a call because this just mind-piercing sound came on the screen, and I thought this was like feedback from my phone, but it was like this Morse code that was Cobra's theme music.
Let's get you back to the ring.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following contest, that fall brawl, is set for one fall with a 15-minute time limit. Introducing first, from Langley, Virginia, weighing 270 pounds, Cobra!
Interesting story that Cobra
it's payback
is not a Marine. He is a member of the CIA.
Special Forces.
Special Forces, exactly.
I found that out just from my man Woodrow the other day.
That's right.
Yeah, this man, they were on kind of the same mission, but doing different things. This man's like a double agent. He's like a spy. You can't trust this man.
Cobra, everyone, who maybe you remember as Jeff Farmer, the fake NWO Sting years
not
later.
To be confused with, yep. Just to make that clear, it's not the same guy.
I have never even heard of this character, Cobra, and I'm pretty good on obscure wrestling characters.
Yeah.
This guy was how long was this guy? Like, were you watching WCW at this time
no,
in 95?
I wasn't.
I didn't really get into it till like 96-ish. 95, these small pay-per-views I'm completely lost on, which makes it fun to go back and watch. So, I kid you not, this was Cobra's gimmick, was that he's a secret agent who's in plain sight and who is identified without any kind of secrecy to him, working for the CIA, a wrestler that moonlights for the CIA.
Yep.
So
makes sense.
Cobra comes out And his opponent tonight is Sergeant Pitbull Craig Pittman. And Pittman doesn't come out originally. And Heenan proclaims, he's not a deserter. He's not a deserter. And then a member of his platoon comes out, who was, I guess, a member of the indie platoon scene in North Carolina.
Yep.
Came out with a shirt on. And then Craig Pittman rappels from the ceiling. Heenan proclaims that he's at war. And he lands on the bottom, and then he, like, snakes across the mat like he's about to take down this this hostage, and chokes Cobra from behind, and we start the match. I have no clue who's the babyface or heel in this match. I was just in absolute awe at these two. Heenan then says, I wish I knew the whole story between these two. I would second that.
Yep.
And then Pittman applies the Code Red, which was a straight armbar, and gets the win 1 minute and 23 seconds, and then he mumbled something crazy after this match, which I rewound three times to try and hear, and the best I could interpret it was, Aka good day, ah.
I didn't even bother. I left that to you. I was like, you know what? You can take care of that one.
Your thoughts on this match, Mr. O'Connell?
It was the perfect pop.
This is why I love mid-90s WCW.
Yeah,
gimmicks
exactly.
Like this.
How many people were in the stands watching this, really? I mean, there must have been a huge lineup at the bathroom. After that opener, you're like, holy shit, this took a long time. I better buy my popcorn now. And I only have a minute and whatever it was to do it. Pitbull Pittman, the only cool thing about him is that he was a legit sergeant.
Which I had no idea until you mentioned that
yeah.
to me.
That was the only cool thing. And actually, a little crossover, he fought in Vale Tudo a couple fights, too, believe it or not. He was actually in MMA for a while.
I had heard he had kind of dabbled into MMA a bit. But, yeah, I guess the best gimmicks are extensions of yourself.
Sergeant
Craig Pittman. I guess Pitbull number three during
that. Pitbull number three, exactly.
So after watching that, I'm sure many of you are thinking, wow.
Best part of the pay-per-view is coming up.
That's the absolute floor of this pay-per-view when it comes to shitty gimmicks. Wrong, folks. Because then we went to a video of Paul Orndorff going crazy. He's been losing lately. And he's in the locker room, and he's throwing around a towel saying, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. Who am I? This isn't me. And then we get a cameo from Gary Spivey of the Psychic Companions Network. This is a real person. I've never heard of Gary Spivey until this pay-per-view.
Not to be confused with Dan Spivey.
That's who I thought originally. That's how my wrestling warped mind thinks. I'm like, is this guy like in a tag team with like Dan Spivey, Waylon Mercy? So Gary Spivey tells him that he has a vision and says, I knew you weren't okay. Paul Orndorff, this deep dialogue, comes back with, how did you know that? And it's this like whole motivational segment about how he is Mr. Wonderful. And it cuts back and forth. There's a reflection of Gary Spivey in the mirror. And then we'd cut away, and Gary Spivey was to the side of the mirror. And then it ended with Paul Orndorff kissing his arm. And this was one of the worst segments in WCW history.
And that's saying a lot.
I had never even seen this segment before in my life. This was a nice little surprise on this pay-per-view.
Yeah. You laughed, you cried, you had a range of them. All I was thinking about when I was watching this was, man, how far has Paul Orndorff fallen? This was the guy that main evented WrestleMania 1.
One of the best house show opponents for Hulk Hogan. Drew tons of money in the 80s, and here he is making out with his arm after being motivated by Gary Spivey of the Psychic Companions Network. And I encourage everyone to go YouTube Gary Spivey and see some of this man's work.
It's compelling.
This was the level of celebrity you needed to be to do an angle in World Championship Wrestling in 1995.
Just don't know, man. Gary Spivey?
Mr. Wonderful, they let me back here to see you.
Gary Spivey of the Psychic Companions Network? What are you doing here?
I got a vision. I knew you weren't okay. There's something I have to tell you. I know you're not okay.
You did?
Yes.
How did you know that?
I got a vision. Psychics know. You gotta listen to me.
Gary, I used to be the highest rated wrestler in the whole world. I used to have so many belts that I could carry them all.
I know. I can see these things. You're not okay, but you're Mr. Wonderful. And you're not feeling so wonderful. These things are going to pass. I see great things for you. You have to be Mr. Wonderful. That's you. That's you.
I used to be Mr. Wonderful. But I don't know.
No, listen to me. You are Mr. Wonderful. They call you Mr. Wonderful.
True.
Look in the mirror. Who do you see? Look in the mirror. Get up. Look in the mirror. Who do you see?
I see Mr. Wonderful.
You see the vision I see. See, look, you'll see the same vision I see. I see Mr. Wonderful. Who do you see?
I am Mr. Wonderful. I am Mr. Wonderful.
You are Mr. Wonderful.
Yes, I am Mr. Wonderful.
They call you Mr. Wonderful.
I am Mr. Wonderful.
And you know you're wonderful too.
I look better than I've ever did before.
See my visions? With bigger cars, bigger houses, more money.
I see Mr. Wonderful.
There you are. You see what I see. They call you Mr. Wonderful. And you know you're wonderful too. No problems. You're Mr. Wonderful.
I am Mr. Wonderful.
Mr. Wonderful.
I am Mr. Wonderful.
There you are.
I am Mr. Wonderful.
That's it. Now you got it.
I am Mr. Wonderful. I like that. I am Mr. Wonderful.
That's right. That's it. That's great.
I am Mr. Wonderful. Thank you, Gary.
So we come back and Shivani notes that Paul Orndorff is no longer Paul Orndorff, but instead he is now simply Mr. Wonderful. That's how he believes he is to be identified. So what does this lead to? A match with Paul Orndorff? No. He was not booked on this pay-per-view.
Nope. That was his booking right there.
That was it.
So instead, I wonder how much he got paid. Did he get paid?
What do you think Gary Spivey made for this appearance?
Oh, anything? A couple of tickets?
Oh, I guarantee you he got something.
$1,000, if that.
My goodness.
What would you have paid him?
Gary Spivey?
Gary Spivey,
I don't think he'd
Network.
Be on my Rolodex of... how are we going to get this new Paul Orndorff character over? Well, hey, there's this guy on late night 1-900 numbers for psychic ads.
Do you think he showed up and be like, hey, can you use me in any way? Just like as like an extra? Hey, come on, I'm here. Just use me. I'm sure there's something I could do.
Just think, if Gary Spivey was doing late night Home Shopping Network ads and Russo had seen him, it could have been Mike Tenay and Gary Spivey doing TNA broadcasts.
It could have been. Exactly. Wow. That would have been the wave of the future.
Up next, we've got the television title on the line with The Renegade, accompanied by Jimmy Hart against Diamond Dallas Page, who is joined by Kimberly and the always memorable Max Muscle.
Yes.
This guy was, my goodness, jacked.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? Renegade, A, he wasn't blown up when he got to the ring, unlike his counterpart.
That is
Number
true.
Two, he did have a couple of... Listen, my expectations were very low.
Mine were dirt bottom for Renegade, and the handspring elbow?
You would have never guessed that.
Not
that was like Snooki WrestleMania 27. I've never expected this.
It's a great comparison, actually. Yeah.
And by the way, this is a DDP before his Smells Like Teen Spirit ripoff theme song.
This was when he was... what was the best way? He wore like ugly spandex attire. With diamonds on it. He was like a pre-douche douchebag. Shivani reminds us how the hot girls in high school always dated the dirtbags in reference to DDP and Kimberly's relationship. And the match starts off with Paige being sent to the floor and walks himself into the ring post. Then DDP sidesteps and Renegade runs into the ropes with a splash and then goes over the top rope and then gets guillotined on the top rope. Kimberly reluctantly holds up her 10 sign, which she had at the time, where she would grade Paige's moves. And DDP goes on offense. He ran shoulder first into the post. Renegade makes his comeback with a clothesline, shoulder tackle, and then the infamous handspring back elbow.
Nice.
Right out of a great Muda here was
I was waiting for
one
the mist.
Rick Williams.
Yeah, I was waiting for the mist.
Then we see an axe handle off the top, gets a two count, and then DDP comes back with a DDT, goes for the diamond cutter, but it's blocked, and he's sent into the corner for a roll-up and two count. Then Page runs into Max Muscle, gets press slammed. Renegade comes off the top and jumps to Max Muscle on the floor. And as Renegade's coming back into the ring, Muscle holds on to Renegade's leg. This allows DDP to hit the diamond cutter and win the television title. And then they cut to Kimberly shaking her head in slow motion at her disappointment in her her husband, whatever the relationship was here. And that was your future actress alert here. Kimberly Page, everyone. Tremendous selling on her part at her disgust at Page and his heel ways.
She was thinking, I need something for my demo reel, and that, she got something all right.
And one day she'd make it into the 40-year-old virgin. Congratulations,
yep,
Kimberly.
Well done.
Renegade was not the worst worker on this show, which is what I expected looking at this lineup.
Do you think you would ever say that, ever, about any show?
Probably not.
Renegade was not the best worst worker on this show.
The guy who we brought in the
hope... Who is so far, Cobra? You can't even say that. He worked for a minute.
It was hard to really assess him. Luger was definitely a standout in that main event, I thought, tonight. Uh-huh. But we're going to get to that. At some point right here, Bobby Heenan had a great life lesson. He said, you want to be rich, Tony? Watch poor people and don't do that. Just a random line he threw in there. It's, I guess, good advice for any aspiring entrepreneur.
Why wouldn't I watch rich people and do that? Why would I watch poor people and not do that?
I guess it's better to just avoid anything poor people do rather than mimic rich people.
Right. Well, thank you, Bobby. Yeah. Can we just say, speaking of that, that the combination of Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan is just really unfortunate?
Yeah, this was a time... It was funny. Bobby Heenan always said he was unmotivated in WCW, like, right from the get-go. And I always thought he had hot and cold broadcasts in WCW. There were times that he shined, and others where you could tell this guy would rather be anywhere else but this place. And that was a... I don't know. What did you think of Bobby Heenan on this show?
He seemed pissed off. He seemed frustrated. There was even one point where he said, can I say something now? I have something to say.
Yeah,
it's really important.
Yeah. He's
and
like,
Tony Schiavone's like, no, actually, we're going to go to this pre-recorded video package. After they showed a pre-recorded video package. So it was like almost just to piss him off.
It's like Bobby Heenan probably just... there was a great story once where John Ramdean was calling this MMA show with David Loiseau, who's doing commentary. And Loiseau, at one point during a fight, just takes his headset off. Hey, I'm going to get some spaghetti. You want anything?
Speaking of that, I did commentary for a boxing event once, and it was with Wild Bill Irvin, who's a boxer in Niagara Falls, and he did color commentary. And his job was to talk about what happened in the last round during the highlights at the end of a round, right? So end of a round happens. Otis Grant, you know, the Grant Brothers gym, one of his fighters, I think it was Tibor Brosh, I think was his fighter. So end of a round, Tibor goes to his corner, and Bill is like, oh my god, that guy's got to work the jab. He's got to work the jab. Tibor's got to work the jab, like, through the entire broadcast. And even, no matter what the highlight was, that's what he would say. He's got to work the jab. Round one, round two, round three, he's getting more frustrated now. By the end of round three, he's like, the end of the round comes, and he's like, oh my god, I can't handle this anymore. He takes off his headset, walks to the corner as Otis is talking to Tibor, and he yells at him. He's like, Tibor, you got to use the jab. You got to use the jab. And Otis turns around, he's like, dude, it's my fighter, what are you doing here? He's like, no, you gotta use the jab. And this is the moment he's supposed to be on commentary. This was his only mandatory job, was to talk about the highlights.
Top-notch analysis. He's providing it for everybody. It's funny, I had almost the same story at the recent Strikeforce show of Fedor and Henderson. I got to go to the show, and I'm sitting next to Pat Miletich. And during Tyrone Woodley's fight with Paul Daly, Miletich is like sitting there, and Jay Glazer's in Woodley's corner. And Miletich is just becoming the unofficial cornerman, yelling at Woodley. And he goes, hey, Glazer, tell him to posture up. And Glazer turns around, looks to the cage. Hey, Tyrone, posture up. He was like broken corner man.
Hey, Tyrone.
It's the best watching fighters, like, at cage side, watching other fighters. They can't help but get involved.
They need to. They feel compelled. And that's whenever I see Otis, that's what I tell him. I'd
be
like,
hey. Is there anything, like, in terms of a fighter, just shouting instructions, is there anything, like, commission-wise that forbids that? Or is that just... You know, fans can yell, obviously, but it's like you're given X amount of cornermen, and here you have, you know, Miletic is like, he was there doing the same for Robbie Lawler, a guy who clearly he's worked with for years.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just, you know.
You can do whatever, I guess. I like, this is totally off tangent, but Jeremy Horn has like a different set of words for stuff. Like he'll yell. I remember once at a Score Fighting Series event, he was cornering, I forget who he was cornering, but he was like yelling like, "Midnight Cowcatcher, throw the Midnight Cowcatcher." And it was like, what the hell is that? And then the guy just did like a transition out of a guard. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
What's that, the deal with like, Frank Edgar and BJ Penn, where Edgar like learned Korean and his corner was like yelling stuff at him apparently in Korean?
That's
something.
Awesome.
I was just reading about that the other week. It's like, this is fantastic. All right.
This of course has nothing to do
with
Fall
Brawl. We have alienated every wrestling fan who's like, enough of the MMA fucking talk. Shut up and get back to Fall Brawl.
Can you imagine anyone having said that? You're like, we're like so bored of the MMA talk. We want to get back to fucking Fall Brawl.
95.
Damn it.
And the love interest.
Did I apologize yet, by the way, for making us watch this?
Hey, I enjoy shows like this way more than the 89 SummerSlam, where I actually had people tell me that I was way too hard on it. It was one of the best events of all time. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Really?
89 SummerSlam. It was like a glorified edition of Saturday night's main event.
Agreed.
So let's go on here. Colonel Parker and... what was Sherry's name at this point? Was she Sensuous Sherry? Was she Sensational Queen?
I thought she was Sensational Queen Sherry, I thought.
So Sherry Martel and Colonel Parker, you see, they've gotten together. Mm. And they have opposing tag teams that are about to square off for the tag team titles.
Compelling.
Dick Slater and, during the mid-90s, one of my favorite wrestling characters' names, Bunkhouse Buck.
Shockingly, Jack Swagger's dad.
Jack Swagger, Jimmy Golden. Taking on Harlem Heat, Slater and Buck. Dick and Buck. These are just perfect. Like, two guys right out of Deliverance here, defending the tag titles against Harlem Heat. The storyline here is that Sherry suffered a concussion, woke up, and was suddenly in love with Colonel Parker. Has this ever happened
to me?
To
no.
Your knowledge. Has any Squared Circle guys ever had a concussion?
Sebastian Suave has just like, had a concussion, woken up,
and he's like in love with Kelly Couture.
Kelly Couture or Silesia Sparks or whoever else. Yeah, just the entire locker room. Well, that happens outside of the ring.
We should we got to get Chris Nowinski on this one.
So, yes, see if there's a correlation. The, yeah.
Unconditional feelings after a concussion. So I found this match at times painfully boring. They worked over Bunkhouse Buck. Harlem Heat did, double teaming him. Slater got in. He gets Stevie Ray off his feet, which was apparently an accomplishment for Stevie Ray to be knocked off his feet.
Mm.
That came with a swinging neck breaker. They mentioned that Harlem Heat combines their street style with WCW professional wrestling style.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen that that discipline transfer over to any other combat endeavors.
I didn't know it was in an official discipline. WCW professional wrestling style.
See, I've seen...
Because they have the best wrestling around. You want to get where the big boys play, you come to WCW.
I've seen the IFL and Elite XC adopt the WCW professional wrestling style.
Yes, of course.
That would be the style I would most associate it with.
That's what I would want in my three bullet points when I'm entering the cage.
lost 8 figures in 1 year. Booker T got knocked to the floor here, but as we mentioned, there were these steps, like right in the middle, and he landed on these steps, which, if I was a worker, I would have hated these steps, because it seemed that none of these guys realized these steps were there until they fell on them and then rolled to the floor. Heenan notes that Hogan wants his teammates to take a lie detector test tonight to see if they would turn on him.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Another.
Well, why didn't they show that segment?
Why has that technology never been instituted here? This would prevent a lot of turns in wrestling.
That's right. Lie detector tests before every tag team match.
Are you going to fuck me?
Yeah.
We see a camel clutch applied by Buck onto Booker, but he powered out, and then he runs legs first into the corner. This allows Dick Slater to come in, works over Booker T. Then they go to a long shot, and in the second ring, we never explained this, but this was the two-ring setup that Fall Brawl always had, and you know, World War III would have the three rings. WCW, they were a big fan of multiple rings. And in the second ring, Colonel Parker and Sherry Martel got into the other ring, and then they started to make out as the match was going on. The referee was distracted by Martel and Slater, and this allowed the Nasty Boys to run in, hit Dick Slater with a boot, and then This allowed Harlem Heat to get the win, and they're upset as Sherry was, I guess, distracted here with Rob Parker, and Slater and Bunkhouse Buck lose the tag titles here to Harlem Heat.
And then Sherry goes to her team, hey, you won the titles, it was psychology. Off microphone. By the way, this is a very little note, I know, but you mentioned Camel Clutch in this match. Camel Clutch is a big part of another match coming up. I always tell the guys at the indie level, like especially at Max Pro and whatever, you need to know what finishes are. You need to know what big spots are happening, because if you duplicate them, or especially if you do it before someone else does it and they're more veteran than you in the card, that's a no-no. Don't do that. Find out what people are doing.
It's very simple. I mean, that's the sole, not the sole goal, but the job responsibility of these agents putting together these matches. And it drives me nuts in TNA when you'll see how many roll-up finishes on a pay-per-view, for instance.
Exactly.
Like, that seems like the go-to finish in TNA. And I completely agreed with you. Then they interview Buck. Buck is with Gene Okerlund, as is Colonel Parker, and they talk about him being lovesick. And they're upset at Colonel Parker for not being there when they needed him. And he says that, I'm serious about this here girl. And that's how this ends. In his,
That's it. That's all you need to know. I'm serious about this here girl. He actually says more, but like, that's all you need to know.
The future,
that's all you need to know.
Tennessee Lee here.
Yeah, that's right.
Then we get a recap of the Ric Flair Arn Anderson feud. And in this video package, they establish Ric Flair as the clear-cut heel. This was a very involved video package. They ended up at Arn Anderson's house. We saw Arn Anderson's wife, which was a rarity. And then we go to, in my opinion, the best promo on this show. And it was even better because Anderson just like took the mic right away, and Okerlund didn't even have to intro it. He was like, listen here, Gene. And he goes into this great speech about how he is either loved with a passion or hated with a passion. And when he wakes up in the morning, he has to look in the mirror. And a man has to stand up, because if they don't stand up, then he's not going to respect himself. And in the morning, he's going to respect himself. This was like a one-minute fantastic promo by Arn Anderson. And I think this is one of the more underrated promo guys in the entire history of the business. I think this guy's just phenomenal. And this was a great example of that.
Agree 100%. And you have to watch this. Like, if you're only going to watch one thing from this after listening to this podcast, watch Arn's promo. Especially if you are a worker listening to this, watch Arn's promo. Because they always say, in the promo, you don't want to bury your opponent, but you want to put over that you have a better chance of winning and you want to sell the match, right? Well, look at what he does. I mean, obviously, people have already bought the pay-per-view. They're watching. But my God.
This was
between
just...
this and Flair, it was just absolutely tremendous. Yeah, the line, like you said, win, lose, or draw, I'm going to respect myself in the morning, and you will respect me.
Gene Okerlund, whether you hate me, whether you love me, whether you respect me or you don't respect me, the one thing I've always given everybody is I've always called a spade a spade. I've either loved with a passion or I've hated with a passion and with a vengeance. And everybody has had a family member at one time or the other that was messing up. And you had to grab them and you had to shake them because words no longer mattered. Well, Ric Flair, I've been back here. My stomach has been in knots. My heart's been pounding out of my chest. And I wouldn't be telling the truth if I didn't tell you I'm a nervous wreck because I got to trade fists with somebody that I love more than God itself. You understand? You've been a brother to me when I didn't have one. Now I got to go trade fists with you. But it's something that's got to happen, because when I get up in the morning and look in that mirror, I got to answer to me. And if you don't stand up in this world, all a man can do is stand up and live by his word, right or wrong. Tonight, I give Asheville, I give the world, and I give you, Ric Flair, my word on this. I'm going to give you all I got as a man, and win, lose, or draw, trust me, I'm going to respect myself in the morning, and you're going to respect me.
And that's it. He walks away.
Set it up. It was just a fantastic setup, and I'm always surprised that guy never got, I guess it was, you know, the WWE has a certain stance with managers, but it's like, man, this guy's been behind the scenes there for a decade right now, and you've never seen him in that role outside of 1 week with Tyson Kidd.
Yeah.
And that's very unfortunate. He was always talked about at once, wasn't he, to manage Chris Benoit? Wasn't that discussed at one point? That
you'd make a fantastic manager, honestly.
It's just amazing that you have these talkers and not utilized. So Arn Anderson and Ric Flair, obviously kind of promoted as a bit of a dream match here, a singles match between the two. And they actually showed wrestlers in the audience here that have come out to watch this. I thought this was a nice added touch, and it did play into the finish. So it made sense rather than just, well, we'll get into the finish. Don't want to blow our load here as Shivani did in the opening match. This was where it got painfully annoying to me of Shivani putting over how big WCW is. This is the premier organization. We have everybody. And wait till Monday Nitro tomorrow night. I was like, my God, man. Like, let's just cool it down.
I never liked that. I never liked that. When they were previewing a television program in the middle of the pay-per-view's not even over yet. And they're already saying, by the way, tune into Nitro tomorrow.
They used to, Nitro, they were always like that, where it's like, imagine what Nitro is going to be like tomorrow night. You know what? Imagine what this pay-per-view is going to be like that I've spent $30 on already.
And we're only halfway through, for fuck's sakes.
So Flair is playing the heel in this match, rolls to the floor very early on. Flair bumped off of a slap from Arn Anderson. Anderson was working a very different style here than you would typically get. I mean, going to the top rope, he worked over the left arm of Ric Flair, continued onwards with the arm. Flair at one point bumps over the top doing his traditional bump and then pulls down the top rope as Arn runs at him, hits the floor, and then we see a clothesline off the apron by Flair to Arn Anderson. This was high risk for Ric Flair.
That was a huge spot. I actually like that because if the story was they know each other so well, then
should see something different.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why I liked that so much. That's why I actually liked, I know this is kind of years later, but Christian Randy Orton, like the way that it's been evolutionized, like thinking of the RKO during the match, that's why I liked that series, because you could tell the story was evolving, and in this particular match, it's the same thing. They know each other so well. If they know everything about each other, then they should know what's coming.
Yeah, I think that really played into the story of this match. It was something that stood out for me. Both were selling after Flair delivered a vertical suplex into the ring. We see Anderson then toss Flair into the corner. He ends up in the Tree of Woe, stomps onto Flair. Then Anderson goes for a DDT, but Flair holds onto the ropes to block it. And then Flair gets caught on top, the usual throw off of the top rope. And then Flair catches Arn with a clothesline as Arn is coming off the ropes. He applies the figure four, but Arn blocks it with the leg. When have you ever seen this spot before?
Never.
That's why I
like that too. That was great.
I'm like, how have we not seen this block like 5,000 times in the last 16 years? Like, I can't even think of a match this has been used since that time. Very, you know, and it made total sense that this guy had the counter for the figure four with Ric Flair. Eventually, Flair fully applies the figure four, and then Flair's attacking the knee. Arn finally reverses it. Huge pop for Arn reversing it, and then it's broken. Flair then clips the knee of Arn as Shivani compares him to a stealth bomber.
How about that?
The stealth bomber. Nicknames.
Didn't have the best lines in the this evening, did he?
You could hashtag this, nicknames that didn't take off. And it comes to a finish with Arn being Irish whipped, but he collapses, selling the knee. I always enjoy that spot in matches, especially late when they've been working on the leg and the guy, like the Irish whip him, and he just collapses. And then out of nowhere, Brian Pillman appears on the apron, punches Ric Flair, who leaps at Pillman, and then gets kicked in the head by Pillman, and this allows Arn to get the pin. 23 minutes and 9 seconds these two went, and this would set up Arn and Pillman having like a babyface alliance coming out of this, and it would lead to, sorry, as a heel alliance, because at the following pay-per-view, it would be Arn and Pillman against Ric Flair and Sting, and that to me was WCW in a nutshell. There seemed to be no connection to what we had here with what they would do a month later.
Especially since the opening match set up Sting's next opponent because he was U.S. champion. And
yes,
that match was, okay, so Brian Pillman now won the match. Or who won the match? Johnny B. Badd won the match, so shouldn't he be getting his U.S. title match at the next pay-per-view?
Theoretically.
The only thing that I didn't believe from this match, John, was Eddie Guerrero and Alex Wright sitting beside each other. I would never believe that. That I couldn't suspend my disbelief on that. I'm sorry, they're not friends.
Maybe they traveled the roads together. They had some Das Wunderkind music. Still one of my top five.
Oh yeah, and the dance
of all time.
With the
armpit
over your
dance.
Head. Yeah.
I have an old Alex Wright action figure. And do you know that that's the action figure in the back of Colt Cabana's car in Wrestling Road Diaries? Do you see that WCW
yes.
action figure?
Yeah.
I actually asked him about that. I'm like, who is that? And he's like, it's Alex Wright.
Of course it is.
I'm so sad that guy never really went anywhere after WCW.
When
he started, he was like 20 years old or something like doing that. It's like even now, the guy's only like... you know, mid to late 30s.
He still has a win over Triple H.
He's got to come
on pay per view.
He does. That's true. Was that?
That's
Starcade?
The next. When every other avenue has been exhausted with Triple H's COO, who is left to take him on? Oh. But the man who holds a victory
the
over
anonymous
him.
Anonymous GM.
Yeah, the anonymous GM does. Can you imagine? It will finally be revealed.
GM stands for some like German title, like Gockenschleim Mannheim. Alex Wright for Raw General Manager. You got our two votes.
Yep.
Okay, then this pay-per-view just, I don't know, it either soared or it crashed here. Because anything, there's a rule of thumb in wrestling that anything involving the Dungeon of Doom, you either love it or you hate it. And I cannot help but love the Dungeon of Doom vignettes because these were like an acid trip brought these to wrestling fans. These were completely fucked. We go to the first of two crazy videos on the Dungeon of Doom, and with such lines as, "You and I cannot coexist on this planet," delivered to Hulk Hogan. There was then this electrocution ritual that they went through with cheesy sound effects. They threatened Hogan that soon your hearing will go.
No.
Then Kevin
Sullivan... How about that for psychology? He cups his ear, the hearing will go. Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. Then we see Kevin Sullivan with these flowers, and he says, "We love you not. We actually hate your guts." This video was fucked. This was just insane. Kevin Sullivan, Odd Cat.
Yeah.
You've talked to Kevin Sullivan.
He was pretty cool when we talked to him.
I always find him to be a very smart guy, and I think there are certain booking minds in this business that... you've got to be somewhat nuts to come up with some of your stuff. And I thought Kevin Sullivan was always someone that could come up with some weird shit that could like catch on. Like he's kind of a understated player in the WCW boom in the mid-90s. I mean, he's not a name a lot of people credit with, but he was like front and center there
the whole time. I'm sure there's people that were legit scared of him.
Oh,
because
no
he
doubt.
Totally was
like he lived
the
gimmick, man. Like, he was really out there. So then we go to another video of Hogan talking about feeling this aura, feeling Andre's presence, like he was right there in his face, because this was when they were portraying the Giant as Andre's son, banking on the fact that fans didn't do math in their heads.
Nope.
That here is this, 20-something Paul White. Anyway, it shows the baby faces training in some army camp / paintball arena.
Yep.
Running from an explosion, just this random explosion. And they also teased the dissension within the babyface group, with Luger eventually wanting a title shot down the road if he helps Hogan. And then we go to a absolutely insane promo brought to you by Cocaine with Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Sting, and Luger, along with Gene Okerlund and Jimmy Hart. And Okerlund compares tonight's main event to the invasion of Normandy. And Hogan says, "You can compare it to whatever you want, but brother, I feel like we just drank a couple of gallons of Agent Orange," and then talks about the Dungeon of Goo, and that tonight it's DTA. Don't trust anyone.
Boom.
Oh,
he did it first.
Gimmick infringement.
Can you believe it? Wow.
It would
Hogan's
be.
Collecting residuals.
Fucking.
But two things. Number one, there's two videos, and I already said this before, but why did they play two videos back-to-back where the heels were the focus of both videos? Okay? And number two, why are the baby faces, if there was dissension, if that was the tease throughout the entire pay-per-view or leading up to this, if Lex Luger's like, "You know what? Maybe I won't help you. I want a title match. You better give me a title match." Why are they so happy with each other? Especially their entrance. Why were they so happy being a team if there's dissension? They were high-fiving, they were hugging, they were touching each other's dicks. Like, what the hell? Why were they so happy?
They're going to war.
Yeah, I guess.
He's That's a real American going to
with
war.
With the Agent Orange.
After they just drank gallons of Agent Orange.
Some believe that we are put on this earth for a reason. We have a special purpose. We are part of a divine plan. Especially this man. The Chosen. He possesses an innate power. He and his father are one. Combining their powers and summoning the Shark, the Zodiac, Kamala, Ming, the Face of Terror, and the Giant. Together, they have put Hulk Hogan to the test. They have lured him to the Dungeon of Doom. They have taunted. They have attacked. They have brought the immortal to his knees and dredged up haunting memories of the past.
Then all of a sudden, I felt this aura, this presence. I felt Andre Man right in my face.
Although the Immortal One has an inner strength like no other man, he feels the need to put an end to the Dungeon of Doom. But he will not act alone.
The Pythons and the Hulkamaniacs declare war!
His army of elite warriors, Sting, Macho Man, are war-torn survivors. And now that Vader is AWOL, the Hulkamaniacs have called upon a specialist, Lex Luger.
I called Luger into the team, man!
But like Vader, can he be trusted?
And I'll stand with you side by side for one condition. I want that title shot down the line. You promise.
Or is Lex Luger another of the Taskmaster's disciples? At Fall Brawl, the world will see.
This was a great stretch of pay-per-views for WCW. If you remember, we have this just fine extravaganza here with Gary Spivey and whatnot. The next pay-per-view, the Giant would fall off of Cobo Hall. And the following pay-per-view, World War III, they burned a copy of the Wrestling Observer newsletter on the pay-per-view.
No.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen that clip?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, that one's worth it.
Well, what did Meltzer have to say about that?
I can't even remember at the time what he said because I wasn't getting the Observer, but it's Hogan. They burn the Observer, and he yells, "Observe this!" as they burn it. Yeah, it's worth checking
out.
Wow,
talk about fourth wall. Wow, yeah. CM Punk infringement.
Yeah.
So what, do you think like CM Punk will have like a MP3 player with the law on it and he'll burn it on the future episode of Raw?
Obey this.
Yeah, exactly.
This is, maybe he'll have a new segment called Right During Wrestling.
Yeah, Right During Wrestling, and he'll just like do something. Oh my God.
We go to a rundown for the rules of this match. They explained this, it was much more complicated than it really needed to be. They explain how there's seven periods, the first one's 5 minutes, then it's two, like, everyone I think understands war games, but the way Schiavone explained this with the screen, I was fucking confused and I knew what the match was. This was like the time Tenay and Don West had to explain the reverse battle royal.
Yeah, and exactly, it's really stupid.
The stipulation was that if the Hulkamaniacs won tonight, then Hogan would get Kevin Sullivan one-on-one. So we have Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Lex Luger, and Sting against... we have Zodiac, who was billed from Yin and Yang, who walks in darkness and in light. Then we were introduced to Shark, a.k.a. John Tenta, who was introduced as... the man-eater from the Great Barrier Reef, Shark.
Perhaps his best gimmick.
He was a living fish.
Correct.
That was his gimmick.
And he breathed oxygen.
How did he live? How did he walk?
He didn't have gills.
Like, why? He should have been on the outside in, like, a tank until he was...
in a water tank. They just wheel him to the ring. And like... what would they do? Would they, like, spill him into the ring and he'd flop around?
He should have had Hunter's water bottle at all times.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, these were the gimmicks that, like, not only someone suggested, but someone said, yes, this is a good idea. And then the other members, we have Kamala and Ming.
You know, one thing about Kamala, well, I like Ming, first of all. I've always liked Haku. I think he's one of the more underrated guys in the late 80s, honestly, because he was an intimidating dude, and he was a tough guy.
He had that rep, like, way before... You know,
exactly.
There was any kind of MMA. It was like that was you asked to a person. It was that guy. It was at the top of everyone's list.
And he was the guy who took all the bumps in the Colossal Connection, obviously,
yep,
right?
Yep. When Andre really wasn't too mobile.
Exactly. Question for you though, Kamala. And I know this is such a dumb thing to say, but still, if he is a cannibal from Uganda, okay, he's a savage.
Yes.
How does he bump so well?
Ooh, that's a great question because
it may be a dumb question to ask in the context of pro wrestling, but it's just like when he was taking bumps in the War Games, it was perfect, flat back, I'm slapping the mat bumps.
There's certain guys who it was like it actually benefited their characters to be sloppy workers. You know what I mean? Like there's certain guys, yeah, Kamala is a perfect one who if this guy were to do a German suplex. That was almost why when Renegade did that springboard back elbow, it's like, this doesn't fit this maniac doing gymnastics in the context of a match. Like, if Ultimate Warrior had done that in a match, it doesn't fit his character. Neither would Hulk Hogan doing a moonsault.
Right.
I think that sometimes, you know, and I'm guilty of this, we kind of watch these guys and simply look at work rate and stuff. And a lot of times, I mean, variety is necessary and guys should be presented in different ways and work at different skills. Like, look at that mid-90s WWF scene. You had such a wide array of characters that all were very different. Their promos were different. They worked differently from each other. And then you had, like, your Bret Harts or your tag division where you had great workers, but it was mixed in with characters.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would have been okay if Kamala crumbled to the ground as opposed to, you know, taking a flat back bump. Now, I know that it's safer to do that. I'm just saying, you know, you can find another way to sell.
Great Khali is a perfect example. A lot of people shit on this guy and his work. I think his style is perfect for him.
For him, yeah.
This guy chops people on the head. Great move.
He's got a massive arm. He's got a massive hand.
Would have fit in well with the Dungeon of Doom.
Great he actually would have.
He would have been perfect for those
I
guys.
Agree. And the Boogeyman.
Yeah, he could have been the Yeti.
He could have been the... Can you imagine with him with toilet paper around him?
Yeah, and the hump.
Yeah, oh
remember
boy.
That? Another pay-per-view for another day. So anyway, Sting and Shark start off the match, and Heenan notes that he would have left the biggest man until the end. Made great sense, I thought. Mm. We were going to see Shark here for like 25, 30 minutes here. Which is a lot to ask of the former Earthquake.
He actually beaches himself, like, on the top ropes, if you want to use an analogy.
Yeah, very
he
true.
He beached himself on the top ropes, so he actually tried to jump over them, and he landed on both sets of the ropes where one ring ended and one began.
Zodiac is the next guy in the ring. Have you ever had any dealings with one Ed Leslie?
I have. He is definitely top five worst interviews by far. We booked him on
the last time I dealt with.
Yeah, exactly. In person, he's kind of a jerk. He doesn't give you great answers. On the phone, he was kind of a dick too. He was complaining about how it was so late at night and it's past his bedtime. And
he's one guy who, and my experience the last time was for that Brantford show with Nick Nitro, and here we are at the media fucking Q&A. And I go up, and I was like, hey, can we get 2-3 minutes with you for the Fight Network? He's like, ugh, it better be quick. Give me a minute. And he goes off to, like, he's, like, stretching. I'm like, perfectly fine, dude. And I just left.
You said 2-3 minutes. That is quick. That's less than five.
There's certain guys, I think, in this industry that can get away with an attitude. Ed Leslie, I don't classify as someone who can get away with having an attitude. Like, here's somebody that I think he has a career because of others.
Correct.
And I just, I never understand that. It's Ed Leslie. Not a big fan. So we move onwards here. it's really late.
Ed Leslie. That's what he said.
Heenan says that Hogan's idea of war is playing cards. That was his big line of the entire match. Sting gets double teamed, comes back with a double clothesline that Zodiac sells and Shark just stands. Randy Savage is then in. It's 2-on-2. By the next period, the WCW Jesus Christ, I sound like Ed Leslie here. they finally get their countdown graphic onto the screen. It took like 4 periods for them to get this onto the screen for a countdown. And then Kamala comes in. Sting's fights back and drops Kamala with punches, and then gets double teamed by Shark and Kamala. And then Lex Luger came in, and he evens it up. He hits a double clothesline to drop Shark and Kamala. This was on Luger. Had just come in. He had just debuted on Nitro like 2 weeks earlier. And
what's he doing here?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Luger inadvertently then hits Savage, and they start fighting each other, and then Sting tries to play peacemaker here. Ming comes in. It's 4-on-3. Ming's choking Luger in the corner with all the heels having the advantage, and then Hulk Hogan, surprise, surprise, is the last one in as War Games, the Match Beyond, begins. And go ahead.
Just before we get to the Match Beyond, because I know there's a lot to talk about there. If you think about War Games, and I'm actually surprised that War Games is as popular as it is. I get it, it's cool, there's two rings, there's a cage, there's teams. But if you think about it, you know, as a fan, that the match will not end
yep.
until the Match Beyond begins. So why, as a fan, do you care about everything leading up to that?
That's always been my biggest criticism of this match. And I find when they do Lethal Lockdown in TNA, you're in one ring with eight guys, and you have just, you know, all the plunder in the ring. To me, it's just such a crowded match. It's all sloppy because of so many guys trying to work together that it's I've never been a big fan of the match, and I think it's a lot of WCW nostalgia that people have always clamored for this. But I completely agree. I mean, at least with Elimination Chamber, you can be invested in the match knowing an elimination can occur before the 20-25 minute mark.
Yeah, same with the Royal Rumble. You know somebody could get eliminated at any time. Not in War Games, everybody's there.
Exactly. It's just like, what is the motive here other than, you know, just transition and wearing guys down? Crowd just sits on their hands knowing the match isn't really beginning. So Hogan comes in. It's 4-on-4. And Hogan immediately tosses this powder at all the heels. Bobby Heenan.
It's really funny. It's true. He comes in. Boom. Here comes the powder.
Bobby Heenan, with his top-notch analysis, said that he's got to work the jab. And that it smells like napalm or gunpowder. So this would be, I would be curious if Cobra, as a member of the CIA, would be concerned about this guy smuggling napalm into the arena after he admits to downing Agent Orange. This arena should have been evacuated if Cobra was a Secret Service agent.
You're absolutely right. Or if he had supplied Hogan with the gunpowder and the Agent Orange.
This was all, like, legit. Like, me and Art are not making this up.
Nope, this was not it.
He had smuggled...
We're not exaggerating either. This is completely factual. This is the most factual podcast we've ever done.
So then Schiavone, hearing this line, was like, how can I sound more ridiculous? And he says, Hogan is running for high water, high land, high Hawaii.
High Hawaii. Good night, everyone.
These were your announcers, folks. And then, out of nowhere, Hogan applies a camel clutch to Zodiac. No reaction from the crowd. And the match ends. Zodiac gives up to this camel clutch.
Which the referee was confused by because it seemed like he was waving it off. He was doing the safe motion like in baseball, like referees do when it's not a submission. And yet the bell rings, and then he changes his mind as he hears the bell. And he's like, yeah, okay, there goes the finger wagging.
This was such an anticlimactic finish to this match. And this was all designed for an angle where Kevin Sullivan then tries to leave. Doug Dillinger stops him, and they force him back into the ring with security. And Sting tosses Sullivan into the cage. No bell rings. It's just basically a Hogan gets his time with Sullivan here. It's not an official match. And Hogan just tosses him into the cage multiple times. And they state that this is all payback for Sullivan ruining his motorcycle that the fans gave Hogan. And he chokes Sullivan with his tape, and then the Giant comes out. Heenan says that we need the United Nations, which is probably a future babyface about to make their debut. the Giant lifts the referee by the throat, leaps over the top rope.
That's the best part of the match, is that he leaps over both of them.
Quite the agile Paul White here in 95. And chokes Hogan, no-sells Hogan's punches, and then, in the diabolical move, he twists the neck of Hulk Hogan, implying that he's broken the neck of Hogan, and the babyfaces come to check on Hogan. Buffer yells over the loudspeaker, "We need a physician at ringside! We need a doctor!" And Schiavone just says, We hate to leave you this way, as Bobby Heenan cackles to end the show, where we are left wondering about the health of Hulk Hogan.
Oh, my goodness.
Quite the angle shot to lead to Halloween Havoc the next month. I'm sure a lot of...
At least if I was a fan watching at the time, I would tune into Nitro to catch the fallout.
Oh, sure. I actually...
I would. I
watched this on YouTube, and then when this ended, the next video was Nitro from the next night, and I watched the opening segment here where an ambulance shows up backstage blaring, and who should come out but the Giant and Kevin Sullivan laughing about Hulk Hogan.
Oh, so how did they get the ambulance?
Dastardly heels, and it featured Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Steve McMichael holding like a chihuahua on commentary.
How about
fantastic,
that?
Fantastic.
There were a couple of credit notes I wanted to say,
too.
Oh, go through
them.
They went through the credits, which
yes.
I thought was really
always
funny.
Always the best part of WCW pay-per-view.
Yep. VP production, David F. Crockett. That's good to know.
Yes.
Supervising producer, Tony Schiavone. as Tony Schiavone. Let's see. Arena booking, Gary Juster. Yeah, with ROH now, I think, right?
Is it? Yep.
Yeah, with ROH. Wrestling operations, Jody Hamilton, who's assassin
the
number
assassin.
One. And Marty Lund. Marty Lund, wrestling operations. How about that?
Oh, man.
It was like the 80s when Virgil Runnels would appear in the credits.
Are you like me, who every time you hear Arn Anderson now, you think of motion capture?
Yes, yeah. The Colt Cabana, yeah, that's the best. Colt. That's a story for him to tell, though.
Yes,
we won't say that story.
We won't reveal here, but that's one of the best stories I've ever heard.
Actually, speaking of Kamala, one of the best stories from that Iqaluit trip was when that drunk girl comes into the lobby of the hotel, and she's like, "What's your name?"
Oh.
And Scott goes, "My name is Scott D'Amore." And then I go, wait, let's all say our names, and let's see how many names she remembers. So here's me, Pollock, Scott D'Amore, Colt Cabana, and a few others in the lobby, and... we all say our names normally, and then Colt's the last guy, and she gets to go, she says, "What's your name?" He goes, legit, straight face, "My name's Kamala. I paint suns and moons on my belly."
She bought it. We go, and then later, we quizzed her on the names, and she was like, Kamala?
She got Kamala, though. She got it.
You idiot. Oh, that trip was so fun.
I know.
Usually at the end of these shows, Arda, we give it a ranking out of 10, and I can't say I was bored with this show. I give this one a solid 5 out of 10 because the cheese factor significantly enhanced my viewing experience of this pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. A 5 is definitely fair. I honestly think people, in all seriousness, should watch that Arn Anderson and Flair promos because I just like the way that they set up the match. And other than that, yeah, you can laugh at Cobra and laugh at...
this
know,
was like the lowest volume of feedback we've gotten in months, telling me that virtually no one has watched this pay-per-view.
But, so maybe we should pick a better one next time.
No.
I'm sorry, people out there, okay? I wanted to watch Arn and Flair.
Hey,
thanks for humoring me.
This is about our enjoyment here. So let's get into this feedback here. We'll start off with Bill Figpin. "I was never a huge WCW guy, but I was a Randy Savage fan and would watch any time he was in. That's the only reason I would ever watch one of these shit pay-per-views from WCW. I mean, what the fuck was going on with two wrestling rings? And not only that, but the massive steel cage to go with it. Come on. I understand the concept, but it still looked ridiculous to me. Favorite match of the night was the Flair versus Arn Anderson match. I have hated Ric Flair since I started watching wrestling 20 years ago, so it was good to see him get beat."
That's right. He lays down for Arn, which I thought was the right finish.
There you go. And then he would... Flair would somehow turn babyface and then turn heel by the next pay-per-view.
Ugh.
Quite the booking at the time.
Yay.
You're up next.
Okay, Alan Gaynor says, "I technically never saw this event, although I did listen to it on Viewer's Choice."
The old listening.
Yep, the old scrambled pay-per-views. We're all guilty of that. Alan, we are on the same boat, my friend. I remember being shocked at the win by Arn Anderson. I think he got another win over Flair a few weeks later on Nitro. Apparently, the War Games main event ends with a chin lock. In fact, it's a camel clutch. Not enough guys working the chin these days. As for the mystery guest, I'm guessing Lance Storm or Bunkhouse Buck.
Yeah, Buck was busy.
Buck was busy. Storm is... he kind of big-timed you, I guess. So here I am.
Shy Abigan. "When I think Fall Brawl 95, I think of the worst case of acting I've ever seen done by a wrestler in a vignette in my 18 years as a fan. Paul Orndorff meets the homoerotic psychic Gary Spivey. Orndorff's forced acting fed lines and facials are so poor that the WCW editing team just got lazy and combined a few shots together. And what the fuck's on Gary Spivey's head? Can't wait to hear John mocking the "I can't believe it" line. That was, I can't believe I've never in my years seen this segment on like Wrestle Crap or just anywhere. That tells me this pay-per-view, it had a lot of like crap on it that people have just never seen.
Yeah.
I think R.D. Reynolds needs to watch this show.
I still go to WrestleCrap.com.
It's a fun site to go to and stuff that you've forgot, like Cobra. Cobra.
I honestly
there
forgot.
There were a lot
about
of
Cobra.
Gems on this show.
David Banks, I was 15 at the time of this event and looking back at it was like watching WWE at this time. You can clearly see Hogan's touch in WCW at this time. Double A and Flair's match was good with a good build-up, but it was funny seeing those two against each other. War Games was like watching the circus compared to War Games of 87 and 88. 95 was awful. I'm sure we can all agree on that. This was a forgettable event, which should have been a Clash of Champions event. 3 out of 10. For future review away podcast, what about King of the Ring 98, WrestleMania 22, Wrestle War 89, or Clash of the Champions 1? You guys are great and really helped me get through my workday. Thanks. Those are some good suggestions.
Yes, we have reviewed King of the Ring and WrestleMania, though.
Yes.
But we always appreciate the comments.
I don't know. Should we... I thought we had an event that we would do next week, but now I'm doubting.
No, believe me, this was a good choice. Fall Brawl. I'm serious. I'd much rather review ones that are just have these kind of gems within them. Like, I was honest, I enjoyed watching Fall Brawl. Mark Robinson, I've never seen this event in full, but one thing I have seen is Lex Luger's awesome selling during the War Games match, thanks to Botchamania.
How about that? And by the way, how has your life changed since Botchamania, John?
You know what? I had actually... I really, this probably happens to you a lot more than me, but I rarely get stopped in public places over wrestling. But a guy came up to me, one or two people it was, who had seen me in Botchamania. And that was that to me was a crowning achievement, was getting
that's
into
the best.
Botchamania with Scott Steiner.
Well,
at the same event where I got big time by Ed Leslie.
That's it right there. But you know, to be fair... finally, after 20 years of refereeing, Corderis also made Botchamania.
Oh, did he?
It was the, and I never knew about this, but it was the executioner against Taker in that Armageddon Rules match, where it was like basically a last man standing match.
Yep.
And Corderis counts down Taker pinning Terry Gordy.
I've seen this one. You're
and
right.
Calls to ring the bell, and Taker looks at him and goes, "Start counting. Start counting."
Oh, Corderis.
What a guy. He's still bald. Dennis Amaya says, Fall Brawl 95 as a whole was a bad event with a god-awful main event and one of the worst endings to a match in history. The show did have its points of greatness, though. The Bad Pillman match was fantastic and really showed just how good and underrated both wrestlers were. I agree. It's just the placement. That's what bothers me. Flair Anderson promos throughout the night and their match itself were also fantastic. Toe, just awesome.
Two, I guess
two.
He means.
Two just awesome. Mistake. Two just awesome wrestlers having a great match. The rest of the show was awful to average. DDP was able to carry Ultimate Warrior 2.0 to an 2.0 is better than the original. I just have to say that.
Say so.
To an average match, and the tag title was also okay. Sherry was a great manager. Since you reviewed Fall Brawl 95, I was wondering if you could review Fall Brawl 96, which was part of the beginning of the rise of WCW and also some great matches on the card. Anyway, John, thanks for the great reviews and highly await the mystery reviewer.
I think people are happy with the payoff.
Yes. Well, no, not at all. They're like, oh, come on. We wanted Bunkhouse Buck. What the hell? I wanted Bunkhouse Buck.
And finally, Steve Kassan. I was so pissed that Vader was replaced by Luger. Little did I know he would end up in the Fed, but this was 95, and I had to reply... And I had to rely on was The Wrestler and PWI for news. I was really intrigued by the fact that Vader and Hogan, arch rivals feuding over the title, were now partners against the Dungeon of Doom. I believe this is the first time someone rappelled from the rafters with Craig Pittman ambushing Cobra. And let's give it up for Pitbull. His finisher was the arm lock, which Del Rio uses, right? Arn versus Flair was a good match with a good story behind it. I remember Heenan shine because of his admiration over the two and the Horseman clique. I could be wrong. Pillman's involvement was good as well. And hey, let's give it up for the best tag team in wrestling history. The Stud Stable, Bunkhouse Buck and Dirty Dick versus Harlem Heat. I'll always be biased for the stable. If you guys can end the show with their theme, that would be out of sight, Daddy.
Well, now you have to.
Okay, well, we will finish off with that. But before we do, Art has got the run of the place here for 3 weeks. So next week, Mr. Ocal, what are we throwing into the VCR?
Well, I have been watching a lot of old WWE DVDs, the best of AWA, World Class Championship Wrestling, a lot of stuff from that era. And a lot of people have been talking about how bad the match between Jerry Lawler and Kerry Von Erich was at, I think it was Super Clash 3.
Yes.
And so I want to see how bad exactly it is. And apparently it's a very convoluted ending or finish. And, you know, this is the unification, right?
Von Erich was like high for this match.
Yeah, you know, the unification. So I want to see. I actually don't know who else worked this card. So I'd like to see who worked the card, A, and how bad this match exactly is, B. So that's my pick.
Super Clash 3, everyone, coming up, which, if I'm not mistaken, features the Guerrero brothers against Cactus Jack and one of my favorite tag teams, the Rock and Roll RPMs.
Oh, yeah.
Buck
nice.
Zumoff.
Yeah, Buck Zumoff. There you go. You can go wrong with
maybe
that.
We can track down Buck Zumoff for next week.
Hey.
So that's going to be coming up next week. We'll take a look at Super Clash 3. As always, coming up, you can check out all your news at liveaudiowrestling.com Monday night, right after wrestling. Where can listeners go check out yourself and Mr. Jimmy Corderas?
You can go to thescore.com/radio at least till the end of August.
Yes.
Till the end of August.
So there you go, everyone.
We don't know what's going on.
Check out Right After Wrestling, whether it be on iTunes or the Score website. Art Ocal's on Twitter, Arta_Ocal. Always a busy man on Twitter. LiveAudioWrestling.com, @LawRadio, and there you go. Facebook.com/ReviewAway is where you can leave all of your feedback for Super Clash 3 and post your questions for Arda, and we will we'll get into the head of Mr. Ocal next week.
I got to tell you.
Some questions.
I got to tell you, I don't miss Way. I like this position. I think I'm going to prevent him from returning. I'm going to get heat for that.
You're going to be a Hunico to his Sin Cara.
That's right. Wei Ting 2.0. I'm going to start pointing in the audience.
You have a bigger physique than Wei. So.
And I bet I can do the bouncy entrance, too.
There you go.
Wei. I don't eat, though. I should have brought some snacks to eat during the podcast. I didn't.
So as Wei continues his 21-day wellness suspension, along with Mike Chioda. That will end us off, everyone. Here it is, the Stud Stable theme music for one Steve Kasson, and we will be back next week. Thanks a lot for checking this out.